Wait, what are you doing? Liv hissed. Cedric turned around, confused. We will need water to wash your cuts. This is the men's room. For a moment, Cedric just blinked, uncomprehending. Then his mouth burst open with a laugh that completely transformed his face. His serious features melted away, leaving him looking almost like a different person. A different person who was still frustratingly attractive, and just plain frustrating. Cedric clapped his own hand over his mouth, silencing the laugh. His eyes still gleamed as he walked into the room and motioned for Liv to follow. "I apologize," he said, still smiling as he shut and locked the door behind them. "But the girls here have the strangest sense of propriety. They walk around half-dressed in the middle of broad daylight, but refuse to share a common toilet." Liv looked down at her own clothes, frowning. Her outfit was perfectly respectable. Tank top, jeans, and jacket. Now a little worse for wear, of course. "I'm not half-dressed." Cedric shrugged. He walked over to the sink and ran the water, putting a paper towel under the stream. Liv moved cautiously toward him and tried not to get too grossed out as she passed the urinals. Cedric reached out with the wet towel and gently pressed it against the left side of Liv's forehead. It brushed against her torn skin, causing her to wince. "Hold still just a moment. I have to clean some of the dirt away," Cedric said, his voice gentle. He was no longer laughing, but his face wasn't as closed off as it had been in the tunnels either. As he moved the paper towel down the side of her head, Liv tried to sneak glances at his face. His blue eyes covered by dark, almost black lashes, his long nose, his lips slightly parted in concentration. A spot of skin near one cheekbone seemed to be inflamed, bright purple in the middle, and spreading into red as it reached his ear. "You're hurt, too," Liv said. "I've had worse." "That's not comforting." Cedric didn't respond, but continued to gently wipe bits of dried blood from the side of Liv's head. He moved closer to get a better angle, and Liv was hyper-conscious of how his whole body was just a few inches away from hers. For a moment, she felt lightheaded and short of breath. Weren't people supposed to sit down while bleeding from the head? Cedric's fingers pressed gently against her temple, at the worst of the cut. He leaned in even closer, so close that his features blurred before Liv's eyes. Was it just her imagination, or was his breathing getting quicker too? Liv wanted to say something to break the thick silence that had fallen between them, but couldn't think of a single thing. Her gaze rested on a gold chain around Cedric's neck. It extended down beneath his shirt, and she could see the outline of what looked like a ring hanging from the edge of it. "Nice necklace." The moment the words left her lips, Cedric stepped back from Liv sharply, taking his hands from her forehead. His left hand went immediately to where the outline of the ring pressed against his heart. Liv knew she had said something wrong, but didn't get it. "What is it? A ring?" She pressed on. "Yes, it is." Cedric averted his eyes and turned to throw the wadded-up paper towel away. "It is a betrothal ring." Liv laughed, sure he was being sarcastic. "You mean, like, an engagement ring?" "Yes." "Wait, what? Aren't you a little young for that?" "I am nearly at the proper age." "Yeah, in Kentucky, maybe, but that's not exactly a southern accent you've got. So where are you from? Eastern Europe or something?" "Well, something. I think you can probably clean your hand yourself." "Oh, right." Liv rolled up her sleeve and set to washing dirt and small pieces of gravel from the scrape on her hand. Under the fluorescent lights, it looked even nastier than before. She wrapped it in a paper towel, trying not to look at the blood flecks soaking through. Okay, I'm ready. Cedric peeled himself away from where he'd been resting against the tile wall, watching her. Good. The museum will be cleared out and mostly locked up now, so we will have to go out through side door, he said. Quietly. Liv nodded. Cedric had almost reached the door of the men's room when a thought occurred to her. I heard you talking to a girl in the tunnels. Is that the one you're betrothed to? Yes, that was her. Katerina. Liv felt a small pang as she pictured the girl under the bridge. She'd been beautiful, all dark hair and fierceness. That girl seemed a perfect match for Cedric, with his rigid posture, untended wounds, and an actual betrothal ring. Liv imagined them in elaborate wedding gear, like two engravings from a fairy tale book sprung to life. As the male half of the living fairy tale pushed open the scuffed door of the men's room, the image faded away. She said something about being killed? Liv asked. And now with the not-so-friendly alley attacker, what kind of trouble are you guys in? Cedric turned to her, his eyes concerned. You were eavesdropping. Liv shrugged. You should be careful when you do that, you know. You could overhear something you might not want to. With that, he started walking quickly down the empty hallway toward a door marked exit. Okay, I can see you're really seriously committed to this whole man of mystery bit, Liv said, her voice low. But the vagueness stopped being charming around the time my face hit pavement. Don't forget you owe me some answers. I have not forgotten, and I will keep my end of the bargain. If you are absolutely sure you want to know everything, follow me. Liv hesitated, but only for a second. The Prince's Tale. The diner just down the road from the museum was mostly empty, so Liv and Cedric took one of the orange vinyl booths by the window. It was mostly dark now, and when Liv looked through the plate glass, all she could see was her own reflection. Cold, recirculated air pumped down onto their booth from a grate in the ceiling, and Liv shivered. When the waitress came by to drop off some laminated menus, Liv ordered a coffee. She raised her eyebrows at Cedric. He just shook his head. "Aren't you hungry at all?" Liv asked. "I am fine." But she saw Cedric's expression as he glanced over the pictures of pancakes and French toast on the menu. Liv had seen that look before. Hunger was hard to hide. "Look, I can't decide between the hash brown surprise and the chocolate waffle supreme. Split them with me? My treat." Cedric tore his eyes away from the menu, but said nothing. "Come on, you'll really be helping me out," Liv continued. "I don't feel like eating alone, and it's not like my foster mom is going to have a hot dinner waiting for me. Rita has many gifts, but cooking? Not among them." Cedric's eyes narrowed in confusion. "Foster mom? You know, a foster parent? Legal guardian?" "Guardian?" Cedric's voice was pitched unnaturally high. Liv wondered if he was messing with her. Had he really not heard of the foster system? "Yeah, like, appointed by the state? She takes care of me because my parents can't?" "Oh," Cedric answered, his eyes clearing. "Why can't they?" "They're dead." Liv kept her eyes on the table, feeling a little bad about her blunt reply. She knew just springing the dead parent thing like that could freak people out, reduce them to stammering, pity-filled gazes, or worse, follow-up questions. Liv had become adept at steering entire conversations away from that inevitable next question, what happened to them? She finally lifted her eyes to Cedric's. He was looking directly at her, his mouth slightly turned down. He sat very still. "I am sorry." Liv shrugged and pointed to the menu again. "So are you going to help me with my pile of carbs or what?" Maybe I will have a little, he finally said. When the waitress came back with coffee, Liv put in the order. She warmed up her hands on the side of the white ceramic mug for a moment before opening up a packet of creamer and pouring it in. Cedric watched her with an intense concentration, as though he'd never seen anyone put cream in coffee before. Okay, so level with me. Were you, like, raised in one of those really strict religions that doesn't let you watch TV or go outside on Sundays? Cedric shook his head slowly. So what are you, aside from a museum employee? If you're even that? I mean, I saw how you moved in that alley. That must have taken some serious training. Cedric looked out the window. Liv didn't know what she expected him to say. Was he a martial arts expert? A speed freak? When he spoke, his voice sounded tired. I am a guardian. And a prince. Liv tried not to react, but knew her eyebrows had shot up nearly into her forehead. She tried to hide it by taking a sip of coffee. Never seen a prince work for minimum wage before. Cedric shook his head. I told you that you would not believe me. No one has, not since we arrived. By we, you mean you and Katerina, right? And there was another boy under the bridge. Is it just the three of you? Only us, Cedric said, then looked abruptly away toward the window. Cedric, are you living down there? In the tunnels? Cedric's eyes flashed over to Liv. You cannot tell anyone where we are, if they found out. Who? The people at the museum? Yes, and others. Liv's voice dropped low. So what kind of trouble are you in? Cedric looked away and Liv sighed. He wasn't going to make this easy on her. We only want to get home. Okay, where's home? Cedric knitted his eyebrows together, as if he was trying to solve a complex problem. Calum. Liv brought the cup of coffee to her lips, running the name over in her mind. Is that in Canada? Cedric shook his head. It is difficult to explain. Well, the night is young and Rita doesn't exactly give me a curfew, so take your time. Calum is another place. That is not this place. Another world. I came to this world through a portal.
Oh, a portal. Well, that makes sense.
Cedric's jaw tightened. You are mocking me. Liv felt a tug of guilt.
No, sorry, it's just a portal, you say?
It didn't seem like Cedric was intentionally messing with her, and anyway, why would he do that? Why make up such an elaborate lie for a complete stranger? Maybe he didn't think it was a lie at all. Liv had seen kids with mental illnesses before. Schizophrenia, delusions, even just drug-induced craziness. She remembered a boy named Ryan, who'd lived with her in the same group home for a while. Ryan's story was tragic. His mother had died right after he was born, and his father had been abusive, and Ryan had a tendency to retreat into a fantasy world in his mind to survive. The social worker who ran the home had explained to Liv that whenever Ryan talked about being afraid of the dragon, he was really referring to his father. Ryan had never frightened Liv, and he really was a generally sweet kid to be around, so long as you didn't touch his fruit roll-ups. Whatever his situation, Cedric, too, seemed more sad than dangerous to Liv, as he stared down at a plastic carton of sugar packets. She definitely wasn't afraid of him.
That thing that attacked you tonight, it is called a wrath, Cedric continued, and I was born to fight them.
Cedric reached for Liv's torn-up packet of creamer across the table. He spoke quickly, and he kept his eyes focused on his hands, which ripped the creamer packet into tinier and tinier pieces.
In my world, the wraths are more easily recognizable. Big, ugly things with horns and teeth and claws. They've plagued our lands for centuries, for as long as anyone can remember. We've never been able to defeat them completely, but we are, or were, able to keep them away from our cities and rule the realm in relative peace. I do not know if they followed us here or were in this world all along, but they are different here. They walk around looking like men, and most people cannot even tell that they are different at all. Cedric looked up. But you could. You saw its eyes. Its face. Liv recalled the all-black eyes of the man in the alley. Something had felt wrong about his face. Deep down in the gut wrong. He looked like there was something the matter with him. She finally conceded. But you're saying he was some sort of monster? Like an actual monster of the horror movie variety? It was hard to keep the skepticism from her voice. The wraths started hunting us shortly after we came through the portal. We did not know who they were at first, because they looked so different here. But they are the same evil creatures from our realm. At least they smell the same. What I do not understand is what they are doing here, or why they are tracking us. Cedric stopped talking when the waitress came back and set down two plates, each heaped with food. Liv pushed the waffles toward Cedric and pulled the plate of hash browns to herself. She moved the potatoes around on the plate with her fork, but she wasn't hungry as she had been a few minutes ago. Cedric, on the other hand, had no such problem. He took one bite of the waffles and closed his eyes, as if savoring the taste. When he opened them again, he dove back into the food with a fury, cutting through it so hard that his knife made a screeching noise against the plate. "Why do you think he attacked me?" Cedric tilted his head, swallowing before speaking again. "It must have thought you were one of us. I do not know why, but I am sorry for it." "Yeah, me too," Liv said, touching the strip of paper towel still wrapped around her hand. Whether or not Cedric truly believed in his weird delusion, the man in the alley had certainly meant business. He'd wanted to hurt Liv for real. She remembered the gleaming blade that Cedric had wielded with such skill. She swallowed, trying to sound casual. "And your knife thing?" "I acquired it," Cedric said, "after losing the only sword we had. Getting it back will be helpful for fighting the wraths off, though it will not kill them. Only silver can do that. I used to have a whole arsenal of my own back in Kalem. You should see it. Beautiful things." Cedric stopped when he saw Liv's expression. "But here, we could not find anything like that. We have only managed to find a few knives in the museum, and paltry ones at that. Old and made of steel." Cedric stuck a giant fork full of food in his mouth and chewed, then swallowed it down in a giant lump. "What did you say this was called again? Waffles?" "Waffles," he repeated, savoring the word. "Amazing." "Yeah," Liv responded, thrown. She felt a dizziness overtake her again, and realized she was having a hard time keeping track of Cedric's tale. She nodded to his plate. "You should put syrup on them." Liv grabbed the syrup carafe and poured some onto his waffles in a long string. Cedric watched her carefully before shoving a syrupy forkful in his mouth. When his lips closed around the bite, he actually closed his eyes and let out a light mmm noise. When he opened his eyes, he looked directly at Liv and gave a small smile. "You do not believe me, do you?" Liv averted her eyes.
"Well,
I expected as much," Cedric said, his voice kind of smug. "This is such a strange place, filled with so many things I can neither understand nor explain, and yet we learned very quickly that people here are unable to believe us. It is odd, though. They can speak to each other through devices smaller than this, Cedric picked up the salt shaker on the table. And yet the notion of a portal is unthinkable. Well, cell phones are possible through science. Portals are fantasy. They both seem like magic to me. But I suppose I understand your reluctance. Sometimes I try to imagine going home and telling my sister M about some of the things I've seen here, and I know she would never believe me. Cedric shoveled the last bit of waffles into his mouth. Liv pushed the plate of hash browns over to him and smiled. He licked a bit of syrup off of his fork and dug into the new food. So, why the museum? What would make you stay there of all places? Cedric contemplated while chewing. Then he told Liv a story about a man named Mal-something who had led a group of the creature's wraths into his home in the middle of the night. A small group of us managed to escape our guards, but there was no way out of the castle. So we left through the only means we could think of, the portal. Now Cedric looked up, eyes blazing. But it wasn't Liv he was looking at. It seemed as though he was focused on something behind her, though there was nothing there but the vinyl booth. We had to run in the moment, but I will not run forever. I will find my way back home. Create a portal back to Calum, and once there, I will raise my father's army. Malquin will not see us coming, and we will defeat him and the wraths. The silence that followed Cedric's tirade was heavy, and Liv felt that she should say something. Well, that sounds like quite the challenge. So, why haven't you gone back yet? Cedric looked away, the anger draining from his eyes. We are looking for a set of scrolls, very old ones, that will open the way for us to get home. You can't just go back the way you came? Cedric shook his head. We tried. It does not work like that. The portal is closed from this side, and we need to reopen it. And the only way we can is with the scrolls. He paused to swallow another bite of waffle. The scrolls. Right. Liv once again put a hand up to her temple. One glance at Cedric's face revealed his complete earnestness. He truly believed all of the crazy things he was saying. So you thought these scrolls would be at the museum? Cedric sighed. I do not know, truthfully. When we first arrived, our only goal was to stay alive. But the people we met were not always helpful. None of them knew anything about the scrolls or our world, or even rats. I knew the scrolls were very old, and that I should look for them in a place where very old things might be stored. The museum is so large and has so many artifacts. I thought I would be bound to find them eventually, but I have so far only found old parchment, rocks, and monster bones. Liv tried to stifle a smile. But how did you get a job there, at the museum? Cedric looked sheepish. I did not, exactly. I took this uniform. So long as I keep my head down and move quickly, only coming up from the tunnels at night, or when we really need to acquire food, no one has stopped me. Acquire food? Is that like a fancy way to say stealing? Cedric leaned back against the booth with a heavy sigh. We were so hungry. I have never known hunger like that. Not in my life. But food was everywhere. Everywhere we looked. In stalls, in buildings, safe behind glass. We did not have the ability to pay for it, so we took it. Cedric swallowed, looking down at the two now empty plates before him. I get it, Liv said. And she really did. Though secretly, she wondered whether Cedric's stealing habit had led him into more trouble than he was admitting. Was that why the black-eyed man was really after him and his friends? Had Cedric stolen from the wrong people? We are good at it, Cedric continued, because of our speed. You asked me earlier how I could move so fast. Crazy fast! It is because of who I am, Cedric continued. All guardians are naturally strong, but we are also well trained to move quickly. It is how we can fight the wraths.
Well, sure, Liv said, unable to keep the sarcasm from her voice. That makes sense.
Cedric smiled.
You sound like Merrick.
Who?
My friend, I suppose, although he would die before admitting it. He does not think it is a good plan to stay in the museum. Neither does Kat.
They may be right. Regardless of whether or not there are portals and wraths and other worlds and whatever, it sounds like you're a little over your head here.
The second the words were out of Liv's mouth, she regretted it.
Cedric leaned back in the booth, and it was like a wall had gone up suddenly between them. Liv felt a small pang of knowing that it was partially her fault for not playing along anymore.
I know I cannot convince you I am telling the truth, but thank you for the waffles, Cedric said, his voice stiff. He started to rise.
Wait, Liv said, her voice just barely above a whisper. All I meant was that the museum basement's probably not the safest place for you to stay. It seemed really dank down there, and it didn't look like there were any lights. Probably hard for you to sneak food in and out on a daily basis. And plus, if you get caught by the museum, they'll call social services.
Liv trailed off, wondering if maybe that wasn't the worst thing that could happen. But no, ratting out another street kid was out of the question, even if he was just a touch delusional. She had no idea what he was really running from, but it had to be pretty awful for his brain to make up such a far-fetched scenario. And calling social services might get him sent right back into whatever situation he was working so hard to flee. Liv opened up her satchel purse and took out her notebook, tearing out a piece of paper. On it, she wrote down her phone number, then slid the paper over to Cedric. I may know of a few places where you could stay. They're out of the way, but they have beds and sunlight at least. Will you call me if you need help?
Cedric looked down at the paper, his eyebrows knitting.
I do not have one of those things, you know,
He put his hand up to his ear.
A phone?
Yes, that.
Right, Liv said, deadpan. She pulled the paper back. Do you know how to get around the city?
Cedric nodded.
I have acquired a map, although I do not travel around much during the day.
If I give you my address, will you promise not to come rob me?
Cedric started at her words, genuinely taken aback.
Well, you did just admit to being a thief, Liv said, trying to keep her voice light.
No, it's not like we have much to steal. I owe next to nothing, and Rita likes to spend all her tips the second she gets them. So unless you're looking to score a bottle of Jack, there won't be much to take.
Cedric looked down again, as if trying to hide an emotion on his face. This time, she was sure it was shame.
I would not steal from your foster mother's home, or from this Jack fellow. I would never take anything from you, Liv.
The sound of her name on Cedric's lips rang in Liv's ears for an extra beat, and she made an effort to push it aside.
Okay, I didn't mean... Anyway, come find me if you want to check out one of those places.
Liv trailed off, awkwardly. As she slipped her notebook back into her purse, she caught a glimpse of her phone lying against the bottom of the bag. She picked it up and turned it over. 4 missed calls and 9 texts, all from Shannon.
Crap, she said. I really have to go. My friend Shannon's probably having a heart attack.
Cedric looked up in alarm, until Liv quickly clarified.
Not literally. It's just an expression. Never mind.
She smiled and stood up.
Take care, Cedric.
He nodded, and Liv went to go pay the check at the counter. Before she left, she turned around one more time to find Cedric still in the booth, pouring syrup directly onto a spoon and then sticking it into his mouth. She shook her head and then pushed through the door, escorted out into the night by the sound of the diner's ringing bell.
Liv's eyelids grew heavy
as the bus moved ever nearer to the small house she shared with Rita in Los Feliz. She leaned her head up against the glass window of the bus, letting her eyes unfocus as the cars and lights sped up and slowed down outside. She'd just hung up the phone with Shannon, who'd spent half the call yelling at Liv for not returning her calls sooner. Liv had lied and said her phone was accidentally turned off, not wanting to explain that she'd actually forgotten all about Shannon during her time with Cedric. When Shannon asked why she'd been at the museum so long, she lied again and said she'd lost track of time. You've never lost track of time in the history of, like, ever. It's one of your most annoying traits. Liv had sighed. I don't know what to tell you. Tell me the truth. You decided to keep that sword, didn't you? Don't pull the good girl act on me, Liv Phillips. You may have all our teachers and parental figures fooled, but I know you. I know where you keep your fake ID. I know about that back tat you keep covered up. Okay, you caught me. I decided to become a really authentic Lord of the Rings cosplayer. Shannon had scoffed and offered to pick Liv up, but she said she'd take the bus instead. Really, she didn't want to answer any more questions. She just wanted to sit and think about her ridiculous night in silence. She didn't entirely know why she wanted to keep Cedric's story to herself. It wasn't that she thought Shannon would rat him out to the cops. Shannon might not have grown up in the foster system, but she still had a pretty healthy distrust of authority figures in general, and she would never turn Cedric over if Liv asked her not to. Still, she didn't want to imagine what Shannon would say if she knew the whole story. That Liv was attacked by a stranger in an alley and saved by a mysterious boy who dresses as a security guard and thinks demon creatures are chasing him. She wouldn't even know how to begin that conversation. Liv could feel a headache building up in her left temple. A part of her wanted to turn back and take a different bus to her favorite spot along the LA riverbed, just so she could be alone and think in peace for a few hours. But she knew she should go home first and put actual disinfectant and bandages on her cuts. The bus was mostly empty. An elderly woman sat with her eyes closed a few benches up. In the back, a large man sat with his back straight against the seat. Liv glanced over and gave a small start when she realized he was looking directly at her. The man's face was craggy and lined, his shaggy hair a light gray that bordered on white. His hands were folded neatly in his lap. But it was his eyes that rattled Liv. They were dark, too dark. And still, they didn't break contact with hers. The faint lines around the edge of the man's mouth deepened a bit, revealing the tiniest of smiles. Liv looked away and tried to calm her heartbeat. Just a creep on the bus. Happens all the time. After a few moments, she risked a look back at the man. He was still staring at her. Paranoid or not, she wasn't taking any chances. The events of the night had left her too on edge. The bus came to another stop, and Liv jumped up at the last minute and ran toward the front door as it opened. She looked behind and saw that the man had also risen from his seat and was standing at the opened door in the back of the bus. She took a deep breath and started down the stairs to the street. As soon as her feet touched the ground, Liv looked to her right and saw the man had exited the bus also. Just as the bus door started to close behind her, Liv reached up and stuck a hand out, stopping them. She slipped her body back in through the door just before it swung shut. "Hey!" the driver called out to her. "You can get hurt doing that." "Sorry," Liv murmured. "Wrong stop." The driver shook her head and pulled away from the curb and back into traffic. Liv looked out of the window at the man, now standing motionless on the sidewalk. He was still staring at her. Liv sat at the very front of the bus until it arrived at her actual stop. As soon as the doors opened, she jumped out and started running toward home. It wasn't until she pushed through the chain-link gate outside of her house and jogged up to the front door that Liv really let out her breath. Inside, the living room was stuffy and the curtains were still closed from this morning. No sign of Rita. Liv locked the door behind her, then leaned back against it and reached for the light switch on the wall. Warm yellow light fell over the room, resting on the familiar couch and coffee table. She suddenly felt silly for running home. With a sigh, Liv pushed off from the door and headed to the bathroom. Once inside, she put Neosporin and a large bandage over her hand. She then washed her face and ran her finger along the cut on her head, cautiously. It wasn't as bad as she'd originally thought. In the end, she was able to affix a small beige bandaid just over her left temple. She moved a chunk of hair over her forehead to hide it. Liv walked into the kitchen and was still scratching the corner of her hand bandage when a movement caught her eye. The green and white striped window curtain was blowing in a breeze. Liv swiveled to the patio door and saw it was open to the night. Or no, not open, but gaping, hanging off its tracks, as if it had been torn from its place. And lying just beyond it was a small, dark shape, barely visible in the moonlight. Liv took a few quiet steps forward. It was a single black tennis shoe, the kind Rita wore to work every day. And just a few feet beyond the shoe was Rita herself, sprawled out on the concrete patio. Liv gasped and ran to Rita's side. An empty liquor bottle was lying near the side of the house, just inches from Rita's outstretched arm. A plastic patio chair was tipped over on its side, with one leg broken. Rita was sprawled out underneath it, her head resting half on the concrete stretch of patio and half on the browned grass beyond. Liv took hold of Rita's shoulder and turned her over. The overwhelming stench of hard liquor and vomit hit her at once. Rita's body moved limply, her eyes half open but unmoving. "Rita, please," she cried, fighting against the rising lump in her throat.
"Help! Somebody!"
The windows in the neighboring condo remained dark. Liv ran back inside to call 911, while Rita's half-open eyes continued to stare vacantly at a world they couldn't see. The Orphan's Refuge. When Cedric woke up, he had no idea whether it was morning or still night, though his eyes had mostly adjusted to the natural darkness of the living space under the museum. It was still difficult to see more than a few feet in front of him. With a groan, he pulled himself up from his nest of blankets and rubbed at a crick in his neck. He heard a click, and then a small, bright flame flared up in the darkness. It illuminated the face of Merrick, who leaned against the wall near Cedric's makeshift bed.
"He rises," Merrick drawled.
Cedric rubbed his eyes. He was definitely not awake enough yet to deal with Merrick.
"Watching me sleep?" Merrick scoffed. "Hardly. Katerina asked me to come fetch you from your royal slumber."
"Fetch me?" Merrick clicked the little metal device in his hand again, this time closing the cap that extinguished the fire. Then he clicked again, relighting it. He'd found the device in the alley outside of the museum, and couldn't be parted from it. Partially, Cedric suspected, because he knew how much the constant clicking noise irritated Cedric.
"I am merely the messenger."
Merrick kicked off from the wall and slipped through the doorway, blessedly taking his clicking fire device with him. Cedric sighed. Whenever he went outside into the wild, chaotic mess of a world that existed out there, he was terrified of running into a new threat or doing something that would expose them. He was constantly confused by new words, places, and situations that made little sense, and every day threw him something new to try to comprehend. But when he was down here, surrounded by Merrick's endless barbs and the stress in Cat's eyes, he longed to climb up to the surface of the museum, escape through his tunnel hatch, and run down the streets, free. Cedric lay back down against the tangle of old blankets, trying to prepare himself for another fight. if it were the kind involving swords and fists, like the one he'd had last night against that wrath, he'd be up and ready to go. But this kind of fight, the kind that involved labored discussions and endless complaints, was one he would rather do without. Again and again the king had tried to prepare Cedric for leadership, telling him that he must be firm with his subjects as well as fierce with his enemies. The second part had always been the most appealing. He had wanted to be a great warrior, like his father. He'd just assumed all the leadership stuff would easily follow. It wasn't really working out that way. Cedric pulled himself up and put on a shirt. He was now in possession of two of them, in addition to the nightclothes he'd worn through the portal and his stolen museum uniform. The shirt he wore now was faded and old, emblazoned on the front with bold letters that read inexplicably, "The Rolling Stones." He had seen many people in this world wearing clothes with words and pictures on them, but as far as he could tell, they only sometimes designated their wearers with particular meaning. The museum guards wore shirts that read, "Security." That, Cedric could understand. But the day before, he'd seen an old woman with a walker wearing headgear that read, "Oakland Raiders." And Cedric doubted highly that she was in the process of raiding anything at all. Some shirts even had nonsensical directions, which were even more confusing. Honestly, what did "come at me, bro" even mean? Cedric ducked to avoid the low ceiling and walked carefully out into the common living area, where stolen lanterns provided some light. Cat was making a meal out of something called trail mix, which Cedric had stolen from the museum gift shop. Next to her was the sword Cedric had taken back from the museum's acquisitions department by breaking through its door the previous night. On the handle of the sword was a series of fresh markings Cat must have just etched into the wood. They were a vestige from the Guardian's own ancient, mostly lost language. More ceremonial than anything else, the language was now used to decorate weapons and draw up formal announcements. It was a fairly useless tradition to mark weapons meant for battle, but seeing the familiar language on the sword hilt made Cedric feel closer to home, if even just for a moment. Seeing the marks in this realm also boosted his confidence. When he'd come across pieces of the Guardian's old language in one of the museum's rooms, he'd felt closer than ever to finding the scrolls. Convincing Cat and Merrick of that was another task altogether. As Cat worked, Merrick lay back against some wooden boxes by the wall, examining his fingernails. He flicked his long hair away from his half-lidded eyes and blinked at Cedric.
"Good morning," Cedric said.
"If you say so," Merrick replied.
Cat shot him a withering glance. "Enough, Merrick. You promised to remain civil."
"Of course," Merrick shot back. "We are stuck in a dingy cavern on some foreign hellhole of a dimension, but let's do remain civil."
"Anything constructive you want to add today, Merrick? Or just the regular complaints?"
Cedric asked. No one said anything for a beat. Cedric took in the faces of his friends, the only reminders he had left of home. They looked dirty and tired and older than they had a mere 2 months ago. He knew he should say something uplifting, something to inspire confidence in their search, but Merrick's smirk pushed all hopeful thoughts out of his mind. Merrick shrugged.
"You call it complaining. I call it maintaining a voice of reason in this chaos. Someone ought to."
"Merrick," Cat said, her voice filled with warning. "Cedric is doing the best he can."
"The saddest part is I believe that," Merrick said.
Cedric gritted his teeth, knowing that defending himself would only encourage Merrick to continue, not that he necessarily needed encouragement.
"How is Cedric maybe the best possible example of why blood and birth order don't necessarily translate into intelligence? Let's not forget, it was his ludicrous plan to jump into the portal in the first place, and you would have had us what? Do nothing. Get put in the dungeon along with our parents?
The last of Cedric's fragile patience had fallen away.
At least we would be home.
Cedric turned away. He hated the part of himself that knew Merrick was right. Everything that had happened since he'd knocked down that first Wrathguard in Calum and escaped through the palace tunnels had been his doing. And now here they were, hungry, cold, tired. Every day it was getting harder to rally his friends. Every hour that passed took more of their hope from them. Cedric took a deep breath.
We will get back home.
Do you know every time you say that,
you sound less and less convincing, Merrick said.
You know as well as we do that those scrolls do not exist. We need to figure out another way to get home that does not involve sleeping in the stone cellar that stinks of mildew and underarms.
Cedric gritted his teeth and resisted the urge to sniff himself.
Merrick, Kat's voice was at its most dangerously calm. We agreed to limit this discussion to whether or not we should stay at the museum. Leave the scrolls out of it.
Why should I? They are all he ever talks about.
Merrick shot back. He pushed his dirty hair out of his face with one hand.
They exist,
Cedric said, clenching his fist. If you want to lie to yourself, fine, but stop forcing us to suffer.
Merrick stood up from his box and moved towards Cedric.
Just because you had the good fortune to be born within the castle walls does not mean your plan is inherently the best one.
Do you have a better idea? Cedric shot back, then instantly regretted it. It was the opening Merrick had been waiting for.
The wraths that followed us must have come from a portal as well. If we can leave the damned scrolls alone and find where they came through...
How do you propose we do that? Cedric asked, his voice rising. We do not know how many of them are here or where they are coming from. We don't even know that they came through a portal. Wraths might have existed here all this time.
Maybe we should ask them, Merrick said.
Cedric clenched his jaw. Didn't Merrick know how hard he was trying? He didn't want to be here any more than the rest of them. But no matter what Merrick thought about Cedric's ability to lead, the responsibility of getting everyone home fell to him.
No, Cedric finally said slowly. The wraths are not to be trusted.
You cannot just dictate he can,
Kat cut in.
Whether you like it or not, he is still our prince, in Calum and in any other realm. If he says we need to keep looking for the scrolls, then that is what we will do.
She looked over at Cedric, and he felt instantly buoyed by her support.
But, Kat continued, staying here at the museum might not be the best idea anymore.
Cedric shook his head.
We have been safe here, safer than anywhere else.
His voice trailed off. The weeks after they had come through the portal had been chaotic, confusing, and dangerous. They'd slept wherever they could those first few nights, under bridges, in small clusters of trees. On the fifth night, the wraths had found them, and they'd had to flee again. The museum at least offered them a brief respite from being out on the streets. They were still overly hot and hungry most days, but at least they weren't constantly on the run.
We were safe here, Kat said,
but the wraths have gotten closer and closer. They tracked us somehow, Cedric.
We have no idea how large their numbers are, and we have no weapons to damage them permanently. It is only a matter of time before they break into the tunnels and find us, like they almost did last night.
Cedric tried not to betray any emotion at the mention of previous night. He had told Kat about the wrath in the alley, but at the last minute had decided to leave Liv out of the story entirely. It wasn't just because Cat was untrusting of everyone in this realm, and would be angry with Cedric for risking their cover to protect one stranger. There was something more than that. Cedric's conversation with Liv had been the only enjoyable, though still extremely confusing, one he'd shared with a non-guardian in months, and it felt precious to him somehow. He didn't want to offer it up to Cat and Merrick for dissection.
The wrath yesterday didn't see me climb from the grate, I promise, Cedric finally said, sighing. They still do not know the way in.
How convincing, Merrick muttered. Cat looked at Merrick, her eyes flashing.
Cedric would not lie.
Thank you, Cedric said to Cat. She turned to him and sighed.
Do not mistake my defending you for agreeing with you. You are our leader, and I will support you, you know that.
But Cedric, we cannot go on like this. At the very least, we should find a place that Merrick and I can get into and out of without being detected, so we can look for the scrolls as well. We cannot stay in this hole.
Cedric closed his eyes, trying to gather his thoughts. It was all so much, keeping everyone alive and looking for the scrolls at the same time, and he really had no idea why the wraths of this dimension were following them, or what they might do if it turned out that Merrick was right, that the scrolls didn't exist. And it was so hard to think when he was so, so hungry.
Although he tried to focus, Cedric's thoughts drifted back to the wonderful food he'd eaten the night before with Liv. He could practically taste the sticky, drippy syrup still. He recalled the way she'd smiled when she watched him eat, and how she'd let him have both meals, and how she'd offered to help. Cedric opened his eyes and sighed. So much for his secret.
All right, just give me the afternoon. I might have an idea on where we can go, but you will have to trust me.
Cat gave a slow nod, but Merrick just continued to flick his fire device, staring at the flame as it appeared and disappeared. In Calum, Merrick had always been quick to contradict Cedric, and yet had always followed the prince's lead in the end. Cedric could only hope that here in this new world, his friend would follow that tradition of talking a lot and acting little. It wasn't trust, exactly, but it was the best Cedric was going to get.
Liv's chin rolled down and smacked into her chest for what must have been the 20th time in an hour. She jerked her head back up and willed her eyes to stay open. She shifted against the hard plastic hospital chair and clutched her styrofoam cup of now cold coffee. It had been a long, anxiety-filled night, and she'd been trying to stay awake until the doctors brought news of Rita. An older woman in light blue scrubs finally entered the waiting area and made her way toward Liv. "Is she okay?" Liv asked, as soon as the doctor reached her. The doctor nodded. "She'll be fine. We had to pump her stomach and put her on fluids, but after a long rest, she'll be okay." Liv exhaled one long, ragged breath.
"Thank you."
"She's awake for the moment. Would you like to see her?"
Liv nodded and followed her out of the waiting room, down a narrow hall lined with faded pink-framed posters of seasides and meadows. After a few moments, they went past a hallway with a placard reading "Burn Unit." Looking at those words, everything else in the world seemed to fade away at the edges. Liv struggled to breathe in, but her throat felt tight and hard, like there was something stuck in it. The walls of the hospital grew fuzzy, and the only thing she could concentrate on was that black and white placard with those two words, "Burn Unit." Liv nearly walked right into the back of the doctor, but caught herself just in time. As soon as they moved past the burn unit, the knot in her throat loosened. After a few minutes, it was like it was never there at all. The doctor finally stopped in front of a room and ushered Liv inside. Rita lay in the center of a hospital bed, her body a small straight line under a tight sheet. various tubes connected into her arms, which looked so drained of color they almost matched the white fabric of the bed. Her face looked equally drained, its only distinguishing color coming from the greenish-yellow tinge beneath her eyes. Liv walked closer and carefully took Rita's hand.
"Oh, kid,"
Rita said, her voice raspy.
"I'm so sorry."
"It's okay. The only thing that matters is you're okay."
"No, I really messed up,"
Rita said, then coughed.
"I never meant... You have to know I didn't mean for this."
"I know," Liv said. She thought back to those panicked moments when she'd seen Rita lying on the concrete outside of the kitchen patio door. Her first thought had been, crazily, that it was her fault, that the wrath had followed her home and hurt Rita. And she hadn't thought the man in the alley, or black-eyed man. Her brain had immediately gone to Cedric's word. The wrath. It wasn't until she saw the empty liquor bottle that she knew what had really happened. And in that instant, she'd felt a bit of relief that she hadn't been responsible. But she'd also felt a sense of the inevitable, like some part of her knew the second she'd been placed under Rita's care that this moment would occur. Rita was kind, but she wasn't happy, and she wasn't good at taking care of herself.
"It's okay,"
Liv whispered again. She leaned closer to Rita and grasped her hand tighter. "It's going to be okay." Rita closed her eyes tightly and shook her head.
"No, Liv, you don't understand."
Liv shook her head in confusion. It wasn't until she heard a familiar voice calling her name that she understood what Rita was trying to say. Liv turned around and saw Joe, her caseworker, standing in the doorway. Joe wore his typical flannel shirt, jeans, and work boots. He carried a tattered leather satchel under one arm. His beard had grown slightly longer since the last time Liv had seen him.
"Joe," Liv started. "What are you doing here?"
But she already knew. Just the fact that Joe had shown up at the hospital could only mean one thing.
"I've come to see how you are,"
Joe said, his voice gentle but wary.
"I think we're going to be okay," Liv said, speaking fast.
"Honestly, the doctor says she just needs a couple of days of rest, and Rita didn't mean for it to happen. It was an accident, and I think if we just go home..."
"Liv,"
Joe shook his head.
"Please,"
Liv looked directly into his eyes. "I don't want to go to another home. There's got to be some way, please.
You know you can't, Liv. The hospital had to call us straight away, so it's already on file. You're only 16, and the rules..."
"Please, Joe, please."
Liv could hear the desperation rising in her voice, and she struggled to get it under control.
"Who's going to take care of Rita while she gets better?"
"It should have been me taking care of you,"
Rita whispered. Liv knew she should turn around and look at her, should try to relieve Rita's guilt in some way. But she couldn't face her. She kept her eyes trained on Joe.
"Rita's agreed to enter a 30-day rehabilitation program. She'll be just fine.
Can you wait in the hallway for a few minutes, Liv? I have some matters to discuss with Rita, and then you and I can talk about what happens next."
Liv nodded, numb. She braved one last look at Rita, who shook her head, mouthed the word, "sorry," and looked away. Liv dropped Rita's hand and walked out of the room. Joe shut the door behind her. Liv took a few steps down the hallway and waited just a beat before breaking into a sprint toward the stairwell. She felt a pang of guilt for ditching Joe. He was one of those rare caseworkers who always went a step beyond his duty, and he'd been looking out for Liv from her first day in the system. She'd always tried to forget the very first foster home she'd stayed in after her parents died, but it was impossible to erase the memories of how terrified she'd been, how her foster parents were strictly religious and unforgiving, how they'd considered her unclean, how they'd left her marked forever. It was Joe who'd saved her from them, and she'd always remember the way he'd looked at the couple